This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to Innovation in Compliance. In this podcast series, I will bring you interviews with some of the leading experts who are changing the way practitioners approach compliance. Although the name compliance is in the title, it's really about innovation. And I wanted to drive the conversation about innovation in compliance into the 2030s and beyond, with a focus on innovations for the compliance practitioner and the compliance professional. You want to learn how to bring your business into an innovative state and more innovative business solutions for compliance problems, issues, and concerns. This is the podcast for you. Innovation in Compliance is a production of Compliance Podcast Network. In this episode, I visit with Susan Younger, who has a very unusual and distinctive strategy to engage employees by focusing on four key areas. We talk about the greater engagement, the more effective your employees are in your company. First, a message from the sponsor of the Compliance Podcast Network this month, Ethico.
In the intricate world of ethics and compliance, each second is precious, and slow case closures are more than just delays, they're missed opportunities. Enter Ethico. Our solution revolutionizes case management, cutting closure times in half and turning every challenge into a chance for improvement. Imagine a workspace where efficiency and compliance coexist harmoniously. Don't just dream of faster resolutions, make it your reality. Visit ethico.com/CPN today to book a demo and dive into our exclusive white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance, and to try our free ROI calculator. Empower your team with the tools they deserve.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back again for another episode. And I'm absolutely thrilled today to have with me Susan Younger. Susan and I are both members of C-Suite. We were recently at an executive leadership retreat or thought leader retreat. And I asked her if she would come on the podcast, and she graciously agreed to do so. Susan, for that incredibly long-winded introduction, first of all, welcome, and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me today.
Tom, I am so grateful for you to take the time with me today. Thank you.
I don't get to say this very often, so we always have to start out by saying we are both Texans. Yep. So we get the Texas connection going here. Susan, could I start by asking you a little bit about your professional background?
Certainly. I am a woman who started out knowing she wanted to be an architect at an early age. So unlike many who chose that path, I, in grade school, was drawing plans. And by the time I reached junior in college, I already was accepted to go to Iowa State to get a degree in architecture. I also knew that I wanted to work on the interiors of buildings more than the exteriors. So that's what brought me to Texas in the first place. And when I got here, I arrived about the same time the embargo did, back in the 70s. So nobody was hiring. They were all downsizing. But I had talked to a firm that did retail design. That was not a direction in architecture I ever even thought about exploring. But 3 years later, when they reached out to me, I was back in Iowa working for a small architectural firm, doing everything from residential to commercial work there. I was granted the opportunity to come back down here and work for this firm for 3 years as part of the production team. And then they helped me to get connected to become the store planning director for the Broadway Southwest stores in Phoenix, Arizona for a dozen years, Carter Hawley Hale for a year, which was a parent company. And as retail was imploding, I ended up finding a new path for myself, working doing freelance again in architecture and massage therapy 20 years ago, so that I've worked with the structure of the body as well as the structure of the environments we work in. And 8 years ago, added bank code, which is the NAKB you see behind my name, which is a personality profile that helps you to make the connection easily with others by understanding the values they make decisions by. So at this point, I talk about the fact that I work with body, mind, and soul and how we integrate in life together in the environments we live and work in.
As many of the listeners to this podcast are business professionals, corporate officers, chief compliance officers, and others, and I thought your current role really would lend itself to a discussion about the interpersonal relationships and how all of that builds towards corporate culture. But I have to start by asking, you call yourself a relationship architect. What does that mean to you, Susan?
It goes back to what I said about having that structural, how you put things together from what I did in architecture for years. But what I really discovered is it was the relationships I built in business and in life that helped me to work through those difficult conversations that any business owner has. It's the relationship of how you see yourself in partnership with others and how you see them engaging with you and understanding what you have to share with them. And especially when you're talking about compliance, if we're looking at compliance from different value points, we may hear the words completely differently than what somebody is telling us. And that's where, to me, it's that whole idea of how do you relate to others and how do you help them create a structure in life that works for them.
Susan, in the corporate world, compliance professionals have customers, except I should say in the corporate world, they're called employees.
Exactly.
So really, I was really intrigued by maybe visiting with you about how a compliance officer might think about having those types of discussions with people that they work with every day, yet are consuming their products. But I also have to ask about the BANK or B-A-N-K personality profiling methodology. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how do you use that?
So you'll see I've got in my hands four cards. And each of these cards has just a simple 12 words on them that are value points. And when you start to look at these, what we do typically in any discussion is if I'm with somebody, I might hand them the cards and say, please do me the favor, read the words on all four cards and then order those cards so that the one that is most like you is at the top, least like you is at the bottom. It allows us to get to know each other better, faster, save us time, and be respectful of what's important to each other. So as you'll see for me, the nurturing is the highest one. So I'm somebody who you're going to want to engage looking eye to eye with. You want to speak about the relationships and the authenticity of how we approach these issues. You want to talk about how addressing those compliance issues serves the community. Whereas somebody who is action is like, man, tell me how this helps us get the bottom line results we want and why I need to not avoid them, because action people are frequently the ones who will go, we can break a rule here or there. They sometimes need to know the effect of that breaking the rule so that they understand why they should maintain it. Whereas the blueprint is the one who wants to minimize risks. So they're always looking to make sure they can work within the framework and they want to know that framework up front. Whereas the knowledge is somebody who might have helped you to create the framework and can see it from A to Z. And if you're missing a point in how you're describing compliance to them, they can get lost in the idea that they're trying to fill that hole into a process. So they may miss the rest of the conversation because they're deep in thought. When you can start to see this happening in a conversation, or you understand what somebody puts as their values first, you start to understand how a conversation with one person might be different with another, and how when presenting to an entire company, you're going to have all four of these show up and you need to address all of them in a way that they feel seen, heard, and respected.
Susan, another thing that intrigued me about you and your practice is you advocate the embracement of technology and you also advocate the embracing of AI tools. How can a leader or a middle manager or any other person, whether they're a solo entrepreneur or in a multi-thousand employee corporation, utilize these transformative capabilities to help?
A couple of different things, because as much as I embrace artificial intelligence and what it can do for us, I also am concerned about the respectability and the ethics of doing it in a way that does not put the tools ahead of the people. And sometimes we need to be able to, when we're looking at these components, really assess, is it pulling in information or has the bias already been established in something before we gather the data? Those pieces all need to come together. What I love about this company that I work with and this tool is in 2019, when they started to develop an AI, they were actually invited to speak at AI for Good at the United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland, because they were looking at the empathetic side of how do we connect with the people to make sure that they understand what we're asking of them and how we respectfully engage them in our business. I think what it, for me becomes important is when you understand how to engage somebody in a respectful manner, you frequently will get them to buy into things that typically they're going, I have no interest in doing that, but I understand the importance of it. When you look at my code and blueprint being at the end, people thought when they first heard I was looking at this and there was blueprint in a title, they're like, oh, you must be a blueprint. And I'm like, no, it's my last, because that timeline and framework were things that I did only because I knew they served the project. I was one who would sooner figure out a way to shortcut something as long as I wasn't disrupting things too radically to keep it from being completed. But I would run off course if that's what it took. And I had a boss one time say, Younger, I just need you to write me a report. And my reply was, would you rather I get these stores opened on time in another month or have the report? And he started to laugh and he goes, you're right. Get that thing done. Get it on time. And I said, I'll be happy to give you a full report at the end. We've talked about it. You pretty much know where I'm at. Me being able to address him in a way that I was saying, if you want this done, I'll be happy to do it. I want you to understand the implications of time away from other things so that he could hear where I was at. It wasn't me grumbling to him, what do you mean you want a report? It was me saying, here's the options as I see them from my point of view. I didn't understand I was speaking bank already at that time.
It also sounds, that's exactly what was going to be my observation. He was obviously an action-oriented person. What is transformative leadership to you, Susan?
Transformative leadership is leadership that has an open eye to what's around them and what's current. Sometimes we get stuck in what has always been a process, and sometimes we need to modify a process. We need to reframe what has been the acceptable way of doing things. Transformative leaders are able to let someone tell them when something's not working and allow them to discuss why they're bringing this forward, why it is important to hear that naysayer, not in a negative embrace, but in an open and curious embrace for what might be an important factor we're missing. And I know that when I look back on the things that helped me to build business, especially when I'd have two giant department stores being built at the same time, a third one underway shortly behind it. If I was coming across something while we were building one of the first two, to be on the phone with the design firm, on the phone with management, and making them aware of what was a stumbling block now that we could effectively create changes for to implement a different process for completing something else without that hassle. It was important to have those sort of abilities to say, I know how we've done it in the past. Let's consider something new now. And now that things are changing so much faster, it's even more imperative for people to be open to discussions and other viewpoints that might help them see something they've never even thought about.
Susan, in my world, the regulators have finally come to understand the importance of culture.
Yes.
And the importance of culture in a corporation, the importance of culture in driving home the message of doing business ethically and in compliance. And so I really wanted to maybe turn to some questions about culture. And how do engaged employees help drive up and improve your overall culture in an organization?
Engaged employees will do more without being told to do more. Engaged employees will also come to you when they find a problem and not worry about hiding it because they're going to be blamed for the problem. Those types of things can frequently set off a fix before the fix becomes costly. I can remember when we were sending out drawings on a project and the client sent to the design firm a note saying they didn't want to do what they had originally said they wanted to do with one department. The team that I was working with were about to send out change order drawings that had been worked on for weeks. And they were not going to put a note in that set of drawings about something that I knew in the field would be built by the time we could get a drawing to them. I said, please put a box around that area, put an X through it and say, hold on this now. Wait till we can get information for what's going to come later. That's the sort of thing that frequently in a process, people are afraid to step forward and say, because they're looking at us, but I can't get it done today. And I'm like, I'm not asking you to get it done. I'm asking you to understand the implications of not talking about what's going to happen while you're trying to figure out what to do.
How do you help, or let me step back. I'm a lawyer by professional training. So when I first moved to compliance, I tended to say, here are the rules, follow them.
Yes.
That simple. No, that's the rule. All you have to do is follow it. I came to learn that there were other methods that might be more persuasive. But how would you suggest, or if you were counseling a corporate compliance function, the whole group, how would you really help them understand how to get buy-in, what opportunities could be missed, would be missed if you didn't get them, but really to engage employees to get that buy-in you've talked about several times already in this podcast?
And that's part of why I love using the bank code for a simple engagement tool. It's not an assessment that takes 20 minutes to fill out. It's done typically in less than 90 seconds. And when you understand those different value points that somebody's looking at it from, I would say that blueprint point of view is the one who's, those are the rules, just follow them. So when you're talking about changing them, for them, that's a very risky position. You have to explain to them the value benefit for making a change. The action is the one who's ready to throw the rules out and just let me get to the point of success on my terms, to heck with everybody else. Sometimes what they need is the understanding of how their way, that can frequently be my way or the highway, let's just go, is going to create more stumbling blocks and is going to create more of a disruption for them that is a negative instead of a positive. The nurturing needs to know how we are all in this together, how to bring together the team behind this and how it supports the team. And the knowledge can be beneficial in helping you put the information together, because they'd make great researchers. They make great ones for looking at from A to Z what's missing. So when you start to engage all of those profiles together in your discussion, you're less likely to have people going, I didn't get asked a question to get my input. It doesn't mean you're going to take everybody's input and everybody's going to feel like they won, but they're going to understand that it was an amalgamation of everybody's input to be the best for the team. And it starts to make them feel seen and heard and respected.
Susan, one of the areas that causes, I don't want to say consternation or even concern, but difficulty is, in a multinational company, you're dealing with lots of people who are outside the United States.
Yes.
You may have different cultural values, but inside the United States, we might even have different cultural values in different regions. How do you help a group, a legal department, a compliance department, or even a CEO understand the different values and be able to bring those together to move a culture forward?
What I have found is a lot of times if that company does have the different employee resource groups, those groups can talk to those cultural differences sometimes, because they can be set up based on different cultural aspects or even different philosophies based on the way you were raised. And those value points start to show in the value discussions. And it's interesting to me in what I've seen, because with Bank Code, we actually have the codes done in 30 languages and in 100 countries. And we try to track which countries end up with a specific attitude. I was working for an architectural firm that did high design at the time that I was working in getting certified in this training. And they were very much what I would call an action. We're going for the big show. We want it to look beautiful. The cost overruns were less of a concern for them as long as it was something that gave them the ability to shine in the media. They were acquired by a company out of the Netherlands. The company out of the Netherlands started every meeting by reading, where are the exits in this room and where are the exits out of the building? They were very blueprint structured, bottom line, no risk. Those two groups couldn't even talk to each other in a respectful way. Helping them to understand those differences would have made it easier for them to make those connections at an earlier point. It's taken them years to do instead of what could have been resolved by going, here's where we have value differences. Let's think about these as we start conversations.
It almost sounds like that you can use actually these values differences to promote engagement by respecting other people's values and perhaps incorporate them into what you're trying to do going forward. That'd be a fair assessment.
That's a beautiful assessment. And it's why we say we have all four of these codes in ourselves. We all have all of them. We just play with them differently. We talk about dancing with the code. And under stress, I will turn to the 20 questions. I will pull my knowledge component forward. And if I'm grilling you about the what ifs and the how abouts and asking for resources to validate something, you can tell that my nurturing and action side that tend to be, let's go, let's have fun, let's take care of this in a communal sense, is not trusting the information I've received. If I'm going straight to the timeline, I understand the risk that a blueprint's going to face. And so you can bring those things forward when you know they're important. You don't disrespect them. They just may not be the piece that drives you first. And understanding that then allows you to have compassionate conversations with somebody that you can hear in their languaging. They are starting with questions or concerns that you wouldn't typically think about.
Susan, I wanted to ask you a question about the importance of this down the road, say 2030, but actually I want to preface it with the following. We now have five generations in the workforce.
Yeah.
And we have even multiple generations now moving to leadership. And I think that's only going to become greater. How do you help a company understand, are the values of those five generations different? Are there commonalities that we can build from? How do you counsel a company around those types of generational issues?
It starts with the values, because you can find people in every generation with different values. It is not locked in. It may be conditioned in based on what we lived with. Having grown up during a certain thing as a baby boomer, I may not have been traditionally led to challenge things as much as I innately would like to do. I didn't have computers to help me do things. I had to go and ask for them. However, what I find is a lot of people, when they talk about the millennials and the ones even younger than them that are starting to step into companies, they say they have no dedication. They have seen no reason to have dedication because all of their life they have seen trauma and distrust. They have been forced to be isolated in many instances. And this on the phone is how they have connected in life. Many of them do not know how to connect face to face. That's where showing them with the values, what's important to them, you can start the conversations about that. I even found when I was first introduced to this, and this was in about 2015, I was working with young architects and designers. I was doing a consultancy with this firm, and it started to explain to me why a young creative person all of a sudden said, what do I do first? And my first thought was, you're creative. You don't need to be told what to do first. Then I understood this was a young woman who was a blueprint in her natural state. So she may like to be creative, but she still liked to do it within the framework of knowing what a typical step was. I could engage her to say, would you help me put together a step-by-step process that the rest of the team can use as a guideline for, did we complete everything? Even if they don't do it in that order, did they complete everything? The young man that was really interested more in lighting, I could send him to research something about lighting that the rest of the team needed. Somebody who was extremely a go-getter, I could send off and say, you go play with this. I'm going to work with this team of three or four that like to work together and communicate as a team and set them on a different thing. You start to structure your conversation based on the value points that group is interested in. And within every group, I can find different values to address. And it starts there and then expands from there.
Susan, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode. But before we leave, I wanted to ask you if our listeners wanted any more information on you as a relationship architect, the topics we've touched on, or to get in touch with you, what might be the best places for them to go or the best ways to do so?
There are easily ways to connect with me on LinkedIn. And I use the middle initial K because that's what brings me to the head of the list in many ways. There are other Susan Youngers out there. There are not other Susan K. Youngers listed. My website is skyounger.com. So you can email me at susan@skyounger.com. And if you would like to crack your bank code and find out what that experience is, I have a link that I can give you to put in the show notes that is crackmycode.com with the /, /, whatever. I can never remember when it's angled that way typically. And then get results. When you put that in, it'll send you, you take the cards, you order them first to fourth in order of what aligns with you, and plug in an email address, phone number, and it'll actually send you an email with a link to a 22-page report about you. We call the profile report. The beauty of it is it also allows me to know that they cracked their code because they end up in my list, and I could send them and share with them the report that says this is the best way to connect with this person in a positive, respectful way so that they could see the benefit of working with a tool like this if it would be something they're interested in knowing more about.
I'm just going to suggest to my compliance brethren listening to this podcast that they take advantage of that. And they go to that code, go to that link and break their code. So, Susan, I hope we can continue this conversation.
Absolutely. I thoroughly enjoy talking with you about compliance because I know the importance of it for businesses to really have the boundaries they need set in place to work with the regulations that they're forced to comply with as well. So it's an important aspect to be able to communicate clearly to their teams.
This month, the Compliance Podcast Network is sponsored by Ethico. Are you struggling with budgeting and finance requests for your compliance program? Well, I've written a white paper together with Nick Gallo at Ethico, and we've made that available. So if you'll click through on the link, you can get a white paper on the ROI of compliance and how you can use that in the budgeting process. I know you will be able to use this white paper on ROI. Are you looking for a quick way to get some ideas for an upgrade for your compliance program? Well, I have a new podcast for you, the Compliance Tip of the Day, where in 5 minutes you can find out a cutting-edge tip of compliance that you can implement or at least consider for your compliance program. Check out the Compliance Tip of the Day each day, Monday through Friday, on the Compliance Podcast Network.